reporter, anchor. It's covered the NBA, Kentucky Derby, part of the magnificent Big Ten Network on the X platform. Follow, use at Kylan Mills. Kylan, welcome. How's life treating you back there in the heart of Big Ten country?
First of all, thanks so much for having me. Excited to be a first-timer here on the show. Life is treating me well outside of the fact that here in the Chicago area, it's 20 degrees and we're still not out of the woods yet with winter. Seasonal depression is real. That's all I got to say here, Steve. But outside of that, we got basketball to keep us moving forward, and it's been a fun season so far.
So you hail from a Chicago suburb. You played college at Lewis University. I just looked on a map. Romeoville is close to where a friend of ours, Anthony Heron, hails from, Bolingbrook. So I'm gonna do some math here. You would have been in elementary school when Mia Hamm, Brandi Chastain, and the women won the World Cup. You played college soccer. I'm just curious, you know, who were your influences? What got you so into soccer that you pursued it at that level?
Oh, 100%. Those U.S. women's national teams in the 1990s, obviously the iconic penalty kick from Brandi Chastain was a huge influence. I used to have a U.S. women's national team poster over my bed for years. And that 100% is one of the big reasons why I got into sports. The other big reason and influence really was the 1990 Chicago Bulls. I grew up in a family of crazy Chicago sports fans. And as you mentioned, I'm a Chicago area native just outside of the city and the suburbs. And it was a great time to be a Chicago sports fan. I mean, we got to watch one of the best players, if not the best player, in my opinion, of all time, in Michael Jordan. We got to watch the city three-peat. I think I said that backwards. But that's one of the reasons why I also fell in love with sports. I'll never forget it. Maybe 7, 8 years old, my dad taking me to the Chicago Bulls rally they had downtown after winning one of the championships. I think it was the 5th. And going on his shoulders and watching the speeches, you know, they got up on a stage after the whole, you know, parade and whatever else they did. And you got to hear from the players and the coaches, Phil Jackson, obviously. And like, that's like a core memory for me that sticks out in my mind. But I just remember watching every single Bulls game, my family, you know, cheering at the TV and whatnot. And so I grew up playing basketball as well through high school. And then obviously soccer was another big love for me, but I played a bunch of sports and I really fell in love with just watching all Chicago professional sports teams, which led to figuring out how to have a career in that, despite the fact that my goals to be a professional athlete never came to fruition, as is the case for most folks.
I grew up outside New York City. I assumed I would end up the Knicks two guard.
Right, exactly.
By the way, full confession, Kylan, as a diehard Knicks fan who's older, when you mention the 90s and the Bulls, I get a nervous twitch. So you'll have to forgive me. So your family, Chicago fans down the line, the Bears, Blackhawks, Sox or Cubs?
Cubs. I grew up on the west side, so in an area where it goes either way, but my parents, who are both rooted in Chicago as well, were both Cubs fans, so that's where I lean, which it's been a tough time for White Sox fans, the worst team in Major League Baseball currently. So at the moment, I'm glad for that, but it was a tough 108 years.
Yeah, well, in your lifetime, though, you got to see the Cubs break the curse, and the White Sox broke the curse the year after the Red Sox did. Another thing that gives me a nervous twitch. But anyway, we're talking with Kylan Mills of the Big Ten Network. So just over 3 weeks ago, the Ducks swept a road trip at Ohio State and Penn State. They're 13th in the poll, and since, yikes, they've dropped 4 of 5, the only win against the last-place Huskies. I mean, what's the buzz back at the network about what has gone so sour for Oregon?
It's a great question, and it's a tough question to answer. A bunch of our analysts that I work with all have kind of different theories on this, but I mean, the bottom line is, by the numbers, the Ducks have not been as efficient offensively. The shot selection and I think the ball movement have been problematic, which have led to a dip in just the efficiency in terms of the scoring, both from the inside and outside. And then defensively, they just haven't been as sound. You give up how many to a UCLA team that hasn't been scoring the basketball? There's certainly reason for concern. A big reason why, though, this Ducks team was good to start the season was just fundamental team basketball. Like I mentioned, just ball move on the offensive end, finding moments to get out in transition and getting bunnies when it's there, creating good quality shots by sharing the basketball, playing team basketball, just being good enough on the boards. Not that this is a team that's great in one specific category, but it's just good fundamental team basketball. And the same thing on the defensive end, just guarding your yard, preventing dribble penetration, playing good transition D, and it just seems like everything has fallen off a little bit for the Ducks. One thing I did want to bring up, now I don't want to touch on a hot spot here, but we have a research crew at the Big Ten Network, and 2 weeks ago, before this losing skid, they had found a stat online, I believe it came from KenPom, I actually meant to look it up before this interview, that said the Ducks were among the quote-unquote luckiest teams in the country, and I don't know the exact statistics that determine that, but basically just late in games, finding ways to win that are difficult to, you know, put into numbers and put into form. So like I said, some people maybe chalk it up to luck, but this is a team that had been in a lot of close games and had come out on the winning side of it. Now, of course, not all of these losses have been close, but there have been times where, you know, they're right in the game towards the end and haven't been able to win. So I do think that's kind of interesting to point out. Have some of the wins been luck? I mean, it's a fair question to ask, and it's something that's been discussed back at the network. But, you know, I think it's just everything has dropped off a little bit. To me, for this Oregon team, not having a huge superstar, and you even look at a Minnesota team that's towards or had been towards the bottom of the conference, and you have Dawson Garcia who can go off for 30-plus points, that puts you in a good position late in games where he can take over and win you a basketball game. For the Ducks, there's not one superstar. There's not one guy who can take over a game. I mean, there's guys who can take over at times, but you don't have that go-to player, and I do think that can present an interesting challenge. A player that I look at and his struggles being consequential during this last stretch is the fact that Nate Biddle has been in single figures in three of the last four games, the team's leading scorer. He's a versatile big who can score both on the inside out. He can stretch the floor. But when he's gone 1-for-6 from deep, he's not necessarily stretching the floor when he starts to go off. Or teams see that he's off in terms of his shooting, and I just think they also need the interior scoring presence. So I do think that's been a factor as well. But I think playing good team basketball, maybe there's a little bit less margin for error late in games because you don't have a singular score that you can necessarily 100% rely on. Like, hey, this guy is definitely going to take over and can get us not just one but a couple buckets late in game.
Yeah, the thing with Biddle, I agree 100%, is it's nice to have a seven-footer who could shoot three-pointers, but let's not make it a habit and a focal strategy. One of Oregon's losses came against Purdue, who we all know made it to the final game last year against UConn. Saw Zach Edey go high in the draft. They played a cutthroat non-conference schedule. But Kylan, when the calendar flipped, they've only lost one game. It was a bit of a head-scratcher to Ohio State. I mean, they crushed Michigan. What about the job Matt Painter has done, kind of getting these Boilermakers right back in the mix?
That's the thing, that Matt Painter is one of the best in the business for good reason, and his adaptability to me, Steve, is what stands out. The fact that they relied on the Zach Edey, who was entirely an interior scorer. This was not an individual who was ever going to step outside. I know that Edey did work a lot in his ability to defend a little bit away from the basket, and he tried to develop more of a shot that's not right at the rim, but still, that was his bread and butter. And early on this season, I want to say it was 6 or 7 games, this Purdue team made the adjustment to putting Trey Kaufman Wren at the 5, who was an undersized center, or at least an undersized player for that position, because he has that quickness where he can take on defenders and utilize his speed to get by them and utilize his ability to maybe work a little bit farther away from the basket than what you would see from a Zach Edey. And I think that Matt Painter deserves a lot of credit for making that adjustment early on in the season and then rolling with it. And it's worked. And we've seen Trey Kaufman Wren emerge as one of the leading scorers in the conference, which is interesting because, again, the size mismatch inside has not bothered him at all, and he's still just such an elite finisher in terms of his footwork and ability to finish down low, again, using his quickness against maybe a little bit slower bigs that he's up against, although we have quite a few athletic bigs in this conference too. But I just think Trey Kaufman Wren has been outstanding, and Matt Painter's ability to continue to adapt and to progress this team is truly impressive. And then you also brought back Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer, an elite backcourt, and Braden Smith, picked as the preseason player of the year, has continued to show why. He's been putting up some great numbers here in this last stretch for the Boilers. And I just think Matt Painter deserves a lot of credit. But to me, it was the adjustment with Trey Kopp and Wren moving to the five that's really allowed this team to elevate. I've been really impressed with Kopp and Wren's ability to work in the post. And then Purdue, just a really good offensive team. They're still able to knock down the three, which was one of their strengths last year. They can hit from outside, and they've just been able to find a variety of ways to score and then be sound defensively. Painter always impresses taking care of the basketball, valuing possessions, and when you're sound defensively, also being able to find moments in transition with maybe a little bit of a quicker lineup. They can do that. So he's done a great job. I think that Purdue are absolutely contenders in the Big Ten, and it will be very interesting to see how this final stretch of the season finishes out with right now Purdue and Michigan State as the two lead horses in the race.
Yeah, by the way, for Oregon fans who recently learned about the success of those adjustments and the caliber of that backcourt, continue. Kylan Mills, Big Ten Network. Oregon's next opponent, Michigan, who seemed on the rise under a Chicago guy, Fab Five legend Juwan Howard. Then, of course, the misery of last year. Enter Dusty May. Took Florida Atlantic on that Final Four run 2 years ago, brought his big Russian Golden. They went to Auburn for a stud point guard. They've got an Ivy Leaguer in there. Kylan, how about how he's turned this roster over and got them right back in the picture?
Dusty May has done an incredible job with completely rebuilding this Michigan team out of the portal. And you brought up the fact that I think he deserves a lot of credit for taking a huge risk in recruiting not just one, but 2 7-footers and playing them alongside of each other. This is something we're actually talking about at BTN the other day. My analysts were saying, like, have you seen this in college basketball? When have you seen this be done so effectively, where you have 2 7-footers playing alongside each other like that, and Vlad Golden and Danny Wolf? And you bring up Golden already has that familiarity with Dusty May, joining him as one of his former players at FIU who made that 2023 Final Four run. And then Danny Wolf, the all-Ivy League selection, just being in a great addition. And those two work really well together. You see the high-low game in action for the Wolverines oftentimes. Wolf with a little bit more of the versatile skill set, can handle, you know, more from the outside. It's just that skilled big man that you look for. He's really good with his passing ability. He can shoot a little bit more from the outside, and Golden's an elite finisher around the basket. And those two have worked incredibly well together. And I just don't know that you look at it on paper and you kind of say, huh, like two guys who are above 7 foot playing alongside each other. And we're starting to see a shift, not just in college basketball, but in the NBA, especially where you want more, you know, skilled and even, I don't want to say smaller, but you're looking for bigs who have outside skills. You're looking for bigs who can run the floor. You want more versatility. And I just don't know that seeing 2 7-footers at the 4 and the 5 is something that a lot of teams would be willing to do. And Dusty May has done it, and he's made it work. And something he talked about coming in and taking over Michigan is the fact that he wanted this, similar to FAU, to be a pace and space team. And I think that's been the case. The one Achilles heel for this Wolverines team has been the turnover issue. And in a number of their losses, you're looking at 20-plus turnovers per game. So that's the area where they really need to tighten up if they want to be contenders in the Big Ten picture here down the final stretch, is not being too loose with the basketball. Well, you still want to play at a high pace. You can't afford to give away possessions, at least not at that high of a clip. But he's done an incredible job. Like I said, the way he's put together this roster out the portal, the way he's figured out a system that works. Like I said, I just think Golden and Wolf have been really fun to watch together in the high-low game. And that's definitely going to be a huge test for this Oregon team, especially going on the road in the Big Ten.
By the way, I saw that segment when you were talking about that. And so I hit my laptop and I racked my brain. And all I could come up with was Dikembe Mutombo and Alonzo Mourning at Georgetown in 2 years as twin tower 7-footers. on the women's,
that's exactly it. It's not done. It's really not done.
No, and I by the way, when you guys talk about something like I obsess, so I spent like an hour searching through rosters. I want to move to the women's side. This weekend, we saw Iowa retire Caitlin Clark's 22, and that was obviously inspirational because they knocked off Juju and USC. But what struck me about Clark is how she literally elevated two leagues, NCAA Women's Hoops and the WNBA, in the same calendar year. You could talk about the kids she's inspired, the eyeballs she draws. What stood out to you about what I'll refer to as the Caitlin Clark impact?
getting to watch that up close and personal last season, Steve, was something that was really special for me, just as someone who grew up a little girl, an athlete who dreamed of one day being able to play on a stage and create the excitement around women's sports that Caitlin Clark created. And it was surreal to witness in person. I got to call a couple of Caitlin Clark's games at Iowa last season. I actually got to cover reporting for the Big Ten Network the night that she broke the NCAA all-time scoring record when Iowa knocked off the Wolverines. And that's when she finally did reach that precipice and surpass Kelsey Plum. But getting to see just the excitement, the sellouts, the fans, the way that these young athletes idolized her, getting to see that up close and in person is a little bit emotional, honestly, for a number of people, not just myself, but just women who've been in and around the game for so long and have been waiting for this and wanting this to happen and have been hoping people would start to catch on and realize just how much excitement there is in the top athletes that compete in the women's game. And the way that Caitlin Clark galvanized that is something that we have never seen done in women's sports and may never see done again because of the renaissance and the fan excitement that she created. I mean, she changed the game of basketball forever. And for that, I know I, just like I said, as a fan of women's sports, will be forever grateful for what she did. It's truly incredible. She's a generational talent. She's among the best all time. I don't care about all the conversations. Well, did she win a national title? No, she did something that's never been done before, and I get heated when I get on this topic, Steve, but she did not go to a super team like a UConn. She went to an Iowa team that had never been to a national championship, and she took them there back-to-back years where they faced a behemoth, for example, in a South Carolina team that literally never loses and that has one of the best coaches of all time in Dawn Staley and is loaded with talent. Caitlin Clark went to a program that wasn't made up of McDonald's All-Americans up and down the roster, and she brought them to national relevance and to the peak of the women's game in the national title game. Yes, they maybe came up short in back-to-back seasons, but still, what she did for Iowa basketball was incredible. What she did for the women's game was incredible, and I don't think that we're going to see something like that repeated, at least for a very, very long time. It was really cool to witness in person. It was surreal to witness in person, and it's great to see what she's doing now in the W, and that excitement is carried over. And one last thing I just will say is, it feels like the excitement has not left the women's college game, which is what a lot of people said. And I've gotten to call Iowa again this year. Carver Hawkeye has been packed. It's been full of extremely passionate fans. They're having conversations on social media. They are still engaged. We're seeing excitement around the top players in the country right now, like a Juju Watkins, like a Lauren Betts at UCLA, like a Paige Beckers at UConn, where people are still very much engaged. And I just think a lot of eyes have been opened to just how valuable and fun and entertaining the women's game is. And I do think a lot of people who have become fans because of Caitlin Clark are here to stay.
You know, I'm happy you brought that up because I brought up something last year, and I'm curious as to your reaction. I was like, Caitlin drew the eyeballs, and then folks who first watched the college game were like, wow, what have I been missing out on? And then when she went to the WNBA, not that they were foreign to him, but all of a sudden they were looking at Asia and they were looking at Stewie and like, oh my goodness. So I think she provided the platform, but the excellence and the magnificence of the players that were already there kept the fans watching. That makes sense?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that is the entire thing of what she did was just the exposure and opening eyes to what there is in the women's game. And absolutely, I think people were attracted to it because you see this generational talent who's shooting half-court threes, essentially. Of course, those things are eye-popping. The assists are eye-popping. But when folks got to sit down and actually watch complete games of basketball, and suddenly you're watching Iowa, and what's coming on next? It might be a USC versus XYZ game, and now you're watching that and realizing, holy crap, these are incredible competitors. And if you like the game of basketball, there's no reason why you wouldn't enjoy watching this. And I think a lot of people realize, oh, we actually enjoy this, and we enjoy the storylines we can follow in the women's game, and we enjoy seeing the rivalries, and we enjoy seeing, you know, what happens with Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark. I mean, it's fun, but I do think that she exposed people, and then the quality of basketball and the stars that were already in the game have helped suck people in, and you're seeing a lot of those those fans who were brought in by Caitlin Clark expand a lot of their fandom to other teams, other players, and just in general, I think it's educated a lot of people about the game because more eyes were turned to the women's game because of Caitlin Clark. So I think you're absolutely right on that.
By the way, in closing, I have to bring up something I read in your bio because my wife and I have a doggy daycare, and we have three rescues.
Aww.
I saw you have two rescues, so give me a little bit about your doggies.
Oh, I could be here all night talking about doggies. I love that you guys have a doggy daycare and rescues. That's awesome. I have two rescue dogs myself. One is, I don't even know, he's a mutt, but he's some kind of lab mix. He's large, he's brown, he's adorable. And then we have a border collie lab mix who are both rescues. And they are 9 years old. They're still going strong. One of our dogs turns 10 here in a couple months, which is kind of surreal. Actually, crazy story. I adopted him from Oklahoma City Animal Welfare while working in local news. That's kind of my background and backstory
right.
Before getting to the Big Ten Network. I was out on the West Coast, actually, in Pac-12 country is where I worked prior. But before that, really earned my stripes in local news bouncing around. And they posted pictures of a litter of puppies at the Oklahoma City Animal Welfare on their Facebook page at the time, nearly 10 years ago now, which I cannot believe. And I saw a little puppy on there, and I said, I'm just going to go look. As someone who was a dog lover and grew up with dogs, I was living on my own in an apartment, was not in a situation where I feel like I should have gotten a dog, and I left that day with the dog. They gave him to me for free because I worked on the news, and here we are 10 years later. He is my child. He is my son, and my husband and I are both huge dog lovers and really passionate about rescue as well. We've actually done some fostering for senior pet rescues. Well, we did it back in the Bay Area. I haven't done it since we moved, but it's definitely one of my, I guess, hobbies or passions is just animal rescue and, of course, my dog.
I love that. Yeah, we've been doing this for more than 20 years, and like I said, I was reading your bio, and I was like, oh, I think I found a kinship here. This is awesome.
100%. What kind of dogs do you have?
We've got, like you said, three mutts, some part terrier. We've had one that was a Malinois. I mean, over the 25 years my wife and I have been doing this, we've had 9 rescues. So, it's a beautiful thing. Folks, she's Kylan Mills, part of the amazing coverage we get from our friends at the Big Ten Network. Obviously, hitting the heart and soul of conference play. We're counting down to March Madness. You can link all she's up to on X using at Kylan Mills. And, of course, keep up on the network with all the great coverage. Kylan, much appreciate your time, your insight. Be well, and I look forward to catching up once again down the road.
Sounds great. Well, thanks again for having me, Steve. Glad that we got to connect. I'll give a little go Ducks at the end. I'm excited to see what transpires with both the men's and women's team. Shout out to the women's team, Kelly Graves and Deja Kelly. We're looking forward to seeing how February shakes out, and maybe we'll see you down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Kylan. Appreciate the time. Be well. Bye.